Welcome to Game Store Profits, where we talk about God, gaming, and groups. I'm your host, Daniel Fisher, along here with the master of my dungeon, Mike Perna.
In all honesty, I'm a little surprised it's taken us that long to get that one. It took us a while. It took us a while, but we got there. Wow. It says something that I'm expecting some, you know, insanely obscure reference, and then no one ever thought to literally talk Dungeon Master. That's a thing that happens. By the way, hi everybody.
Hey everybody. So, Mike, how you been doing?
I've been doing pretty good.
What's that?
Wow, that was a bit.
What?
Bit of a long trip there.
Romo, where you been?
Ladies and gentlemen, a temporal rift has opened up, and in comes Jeff Romo.
What the heck, Kat? Look, I just went down to the corner game store. I picked up those dice you were talking about here, and I thought, well, I'll just be gone a couple minutes, and then, you know, get back in time for recording. So where are we at? Like episode 145, 146, something like that?
165? And that's the wrong color dice. Take them back.
Oh, man. Dice normative monster.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't been paying attention, we have just been bombarded and by our wonderful man Jeff Romo. We've missed him so much.
Hey, I've
Jeff,
missed you guys.
How are you doing, buddy?
I've totally missed you guys. It's been a heck of a three month period. Has it only been three? One, two, three. It's only been 3 months. Wow,
it's been something like that. Yeah,
it's for like 3 years.
Yeah, it's good to be back. It feels right. I want pork chops.
So, I will say that, you know, the last time we heard Mr. Romo, since, you know, not including the last time he was on here regularly, was that, oh my god, I say, Jeff, how about we, you know, just have it so that you can say something to the people, give everybody an update. Yeah. 45 minutes of editing Jeff having this gut-wrenching moments on mics later, I'm like, well, I guess I'm not saying a dang thing this episode. We're just going to let this roll.
Wow. I told you at the very end of that clip, I was like, I am so sorry. I hope editing goes okay. I've got to log off and go to work.
So we won't make you go through all that again. Like a couple episodes ago, you can hear all that story about where Jeff was, what he was dealing with, and what God's been doing in that process. So we do not need to spend any time there. But other than that stuff, other than all that weighty, oh my goodness, let's not dwell on this, because you have to dwell with that a lot of times, and we're trying to get you away from that to step away and to enjoy some time with some good friends.
Yes.
So tell me about other stuff. Has there been other stuff? I've heard rumor and folktale that the Bard Table has happened, or at least partly has happened.
Yes. So so before I went on this little hiatus, I had been setting up the All Bards campaigns, and two out of the three have completed to much fanfare and celebration, at least within my quarter, because I thought the players just did an awesome job. And then the third one, we've started episode one already, and that's been we're not recording that one just because a couple of them are brand new players. And I thought, you know what, we're just kind of putting the group together. Let's see where things go. And if they want to record at a later time, that's great. But we're just kind of letting this one ride. But I've got cumulatively about 19 or 20 hours of recordings to edit and get set up for En-ROADS Plays. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm super excited about this because y'all know my penchant for the bards.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I am, as it stands, if nothing else, like I know a lot of the people who are playing, a lot of them are, it's fun. When we started calling our community the regulars, it's hard because how do I make the regulars?
Right.
One of our frequently occurring regulars, a handful of them have shown up in the tavern mentioning the Bard's game. So I know some of the people involved. So I know these games are going to be fantastic. But the other reason that I'm curious as to the outcome of these games, because sadly, with me being busy as I am, plus the imminent arrival of my son,
Yay!
I basically said, no, dude, there's no way I could be part of this game. But then Jeff asked me. Yeah, stop that. So Jeff asked me if he could take my wonderful, what do I want to call him? The pseudo mascot of Inroads, Drogon Anvil Song, and make him an NPC. And I'm curious, Jeff, has Drogon shown up? And if yes, when can I hear about the awesomeness?
He did. You know, there was, it's interesting the way it was laid out. And this just kind of a testament to like how different people do different things with the same thing, right? I had, the way I had this thing planned out, it had a, it's basically five scenes, five potential scenes with the idea that they'll probably go through two or three of them. And they went in different directions. They investigated different things. And one of those things ended up being in a tavern run by a kobold who had a nightly slam poetry event. And this is where the beloved Drogon Anvil Song makes a makes an appearance.
As he should.
As he should. He was on stage, and then after his run, there was a half orc, like an 8-foot half orc with a big giant drum that was going to go on after him or something like that. But I'd have to go back to the recording. But yeah, he's in there. He's in there in a joint run by a beatnik kobold. So pretty cool.
I love everything. I love everything about that sentence.
It was a lot of fun. It's one of those things where I love Faerun, and I love, you know, the Forgotten Realms in general. I love Greyhawk and all of the things that are there, but it's hard to tread on places that have been before when, you know, you've got like a short stint to play. So I actually have more fun letting the players just kind of create little things around the city. I set the city as like a canal place, kind of like Florence in medieval times. And in fact, I even use an old medieval map of Florence to kind of show them where they are. And they just take it and run. I was like, well, you know what? This clue leads you to this area, and it's about this area. Who here has been there, and what's it like? And so they just take it and run. So it's a lot of fun to see their creativity. We have some people with musical talent, not me. But we do have some folks who were there with like little instruments. Our fan favorite Alyssa, she brought along her bass guitar. Yep, and she played a Kinku bard, which was a lot of fun to have. So yeah, I can't wait to get all those things edited and out to the YouTubes and for everybody to enjoy.
I'm excited for it to hit the YouTubes. I can't wait to watch it.
Yeah, it was good fun. It was good fun. It was good fun for sure. Other than that, I mean, it's been like I get like little sessions here and there that I kind of squeeze in. Right when things were kind of hitting their apex in real life and started kind of descending a bit, I had like a sanity check with a couple of folks. Brent Brown, you guys know as Dr. Loom from our Victoriana game. He was benevolent enough to run a quick Cthulhu one or two shot, and that kind of like got me back into like kind of getting out of myself. And
which reminds me, I still need to run. I've threatened it a number of times. I still need to record a game of Reflections.
Oh yeah,
for the YouTube channel, because that game fun. Is at a recent one of the game days at my local church. I had one of the kids look at me and said, you know, I'd love to do a role playing. I go, dude, we can't do role playing in this context, but there are some GM list stuff. So I told him about Fiasco and I told him about some other stuff. And I said, yeah. And there's this game called Reflections. It's a 2-player GM list role playing game. And he's like, can we play that one? I'm like, well, yeah, that one we actually can pull off. So I brought it one Sunday and my goodness, it's like I had blown his mind, like in a literal sense. He was just like, I warned him. I said, I've never played this game and not had a solid moment of like 3 minutes of dead silence as you just parse what just happened. And it's really fun too, because his mom is like a super talented actress. And so I basically sent him home with a PDF of the rules and a couple copies of the character sheet. And I said, why don't you ask your mom to play this with you? Because I can't even fathom the stuff that she's going to do. And he came up to me, the following week, and he's like, oh my goodness, we need to play this again.
Cool. That's good. That's really cool. Yeah. But I mean, anyway, it's, yeah, being able to game once in a while, just get in a session here or there, was kind of a good sanity saver for me. It helps. And I mentioned that in that recording that, you know, the idea of gameplay and being around the table in a non-threatening situation, or even just applying my brain as a game master, was just a way for me to kind of reconnect, ironically, with reality. So,
well, we've made that argument before that I almost want to say, like, I don't know how much of this is quote and how much of this is fictionalized. A while back, there was kind of this dramatization of a conversation that happened between Tolkien and C.S. Lewis before C.S. Lewis became a Christian. And it was Tolkien basically saying that these stories of myth, these legends, these folk tales, all of them are able to take the mind to a place that says there is something beyond this. And once you go from that place, that there is something beyond the visible, something beyond the stuff that's right in front of you, that's when you start seeing God. And so we've done that. We've made that conversation a bunch of times with, you know, just talking about role-playing games over the years we've been doing this. Just the idea that there is a moment that you're having this stuff happen on the table, and you're processing all this stuff as a character, but that character is allowing you to see yourself from a third person perspective. It allows you to see what life could be and maybe even should be, and allows you to see that in a way that you won't notice when you're doing it, you know, when you're looking at your own life and your own self.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. So, past 3 months, both of you summarize what's happened. 1, 2, 3, go.
Well, we don't want to, I mean, we can have that conversation after the mics are off, but these people have had to endure us. I mean, oh, yeah. Come on.
Yeah, we had game days. That's it. Yeah.
Stuff happens.
Gen Con, I've been sick. Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, I'm actually, you mentioned Gen Con. I'm actually super psyched because I will be, I'm sadly only going to be there for a day, but Sean and his family are going to be there the entire time. They're going to PAX Unplugged.
I'm not jealous. I'm not.
Why are you not jealous? Well, you went to Gen Con, so.
Yeah, well, because a lot of people don't realize that in just a few short months, I'm going to be in Wisconsin.
You're going to GaryCon.
Yes, with the En-ROADS Traveling Library. Yeah. And then I get to go to Gen Con this year. Coming up
the next year. Yeah.
You mean next year?
Huh? Next
yeah.
year.
Yeah. But I'll be working.
So. Let's break this down for some people. Because now we got to realize that, you know, people who are in the tavern have heard us talk about a lot of this stuff. Daniel, you and I have mentioned some of this stuff on previous episodes. But I think it's important that we take a little bit of time to break this down. I'm going to PAX Unplugged, which for me is, I mean, granted, there are smaller local cons, but as far as large scale kind of conventions, this pretty much is my local con. It's even more local for Sean. So the potential is that this year I'm kind of just going because, again, the imminent arrival of my son, I can't spend too much time going to the con. Susan right. kind of wants me to be here to like help her in her state of pregnancy. And so I can't be going off to the whole convention, but my goal this year is to go there and experience the Saturday. Cause even when cons are super busy and super crazy the whole time, usually that Saturday is the day. So I'm going to go and I'm going to spend that Saturday looking around, seeing what the convention's like. And depending on how that goes, if things go well, in all likelihood, there's potential that this might be as literally half of the En-ROADS board is within shouting distance of this con. This might be like our con. The potential is pretty cool. I'm really excited to see what these guys do because these guys definitely know how to run a show. PAX, all the different PAX cons are pretty much universally awesome. And so I'm really excited about the potential for this one that's specifically board games. As these guys do more and more stuff, like they have their Twitch channel right now. They do stuff like playing, they play War Machine. They do all sorts of different stuff on there. They do all sorts of different role-playing stuff because now not only do they have Acquisitions Incorporated, they have Acquisitions Incorporated, the C-Team. They have all sorts of different stuff going on. So, and then I'm still, everything I've heard leading up to it is that they're still in process, but I'm still holding out hope that I wouldn't be surprised if their game, Thornwatch, that they're doing with Loan Shark, I'm really hoping that Thornwatch comes out. Because I'm really curious to how that game plays. But, yeah, I'm super excited. I have a ton of Dwarf Bards Rock little badge ribbons that I hope to give out. I know that there are a lot of regulars that will be in attendance at the event, and I'm hoping to find as many of them as I can. And you never know. I looked, when this first got announced, I looked into what it costs to get booth space. And my gosh, I looked at it, I go, you know, as much as I want to get one, as cool as it would be, it's not worth it. However, there's potential that if this goes well, I was talking with Waltney and those guys, and they would be willing to share booth space with us, have all our swag there and all that stuff, and potentially next year do like go halvesies on a booth.
You know, that's because they'll make me get all their team members ready for it. Get signed up and fundraise.
If you can time it right, like next year, if you can talk to the people who organize PAX and have them time it to where that following Sunday will be an Eagles home game, I'll like make it a mega weekend, and that would be amazing. I can go to PAX, we can roll dice together, have fun, and then I'm gonna start whipping batteries.
You could go to the abomination that is the Eagles.
but we'll have to. We have to take a train there.
I don't mind trains.
I don't mind trains.
But anyway, so the short version of all that shenanigans is to say that I'm really excited about the potential for this one because it is so close to me. I feel like all those guys out in Indiana who are just like oh yeah, it's a car ride for me. I'm like,
I get to go home and sleep in my own bed.
Yeah, like you jerks. But yeah, so I'm excited about that, and then. Mr. Fisher, as we found out recently, is going to GaryCon.
Yep.
Tell us about that, so, dude.
Yeah, break down, like, we mentioned that you were going, but let's really look at what you're going to be doing there.
And tell us the truth, like, what's Gary Coleman like? I mean,
Gary Coleman is a very short man. So our friend Derek Watt, the Geek Preacher, came to us a while back and said, hey guys, I've been asked by the staff at GaryCon to bring back board games. Because, you know, that's what started it for Gary, was board games. It wasn't D&D. D&D grew out of his love for board games and tabletop wargaming. So, but the thing is, though, everybody goes to GaryCon, they play D&D. They don't play any board games whatsoever.
Well, that's where you gravitate towards, you know. That's
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're like, well, let's bring back board games. So they tap him to do it. And he said, well, the best people, I have the people to do that. To us. Inroads.
He knows you've got all the checkers.
Yeah, so I've been talking with him, and we're building up events as well. You know, we're going to have the library. People just come and check out a game, play the game, bring it back. But I'll be teaching a painting class during this time period, and, you know, we're going to try to do a few other things as well. You know, heck, I might even get to play games with Ernie. And Luke.
Oh, that's quite possible because I've met both of those guys through Derek, so it's quite possible.
Yeah, and I was like, Derek's like, well, we got to get a hotel for you guys. Make sure you got a hotel. I was like, that's cool. If not, we could just stay with Ernie. He was, that's a possibility. Do you want to do that?
So, I mean, like, if you stay with Ernie, then you can, like, check out his Ghostbusters outfit. I mean, you can check out all of these things with him.
Wrong Ernie.
Wait, what?
Which Ernie are you talking about?
As awesome as it would be to hang out with Ernie Hudson.
Yeah!
But no, it Ernie Gygax
Jr. I get it.
Yeah.
You know I get
anyway,
it.
Anyway, But yeah, and I'll also get to hang out with some more regulars because they'll be there as well. Like, for instance, Daniel Fisher. I'll get to hang out with him.
The other Daniel
Fisher. The other Daniel Fisher.
Yeah.
This is the one from the red universe. You know, we're in the blue universe. He's the one from the red universe.
So. Mirror, mirror, Daniel Fisher.
Yeah.
And we hang out a little bit at Gen Con, but, you know, this is a convention he goes to as well because of Stefan Picorni over at the door and all that, you know, gets him into it and stuff.
Well, I'm a little worried about this, though. I mean, this brings up a whole slew of, like, space-time continuum concerns. I mean, having both Daniel Fishers in one space. I mean, if you touch one another's hands, I mean, is that...
We hugged. We hugged at Gen Con. The world didn't end.
And we're okay.
Yeah.
Very good. I'm glad that didn't improve.
We're excited. So far, my team is Mr. Zach Hughes and his wife, and Mr. Chuck Combo, and we just pretty much added a new one, Mr. Sean Brooks.
Oh, he's
going
to go
Sean's too? Going out to GaryCon.
Yes, wow, he lucky. Is. So
that's pretty cool.
Except he's going to be sleeping on the floor.
I think he'll do it.
Yeah. You might. Do you know if the guys at Saving the Game are going to head out there? I know they've been out to a GaryCon or two.
No, not that I heard of. I mean, yeah, we did talk to them about it a little bit, but they just didn't seem interested.
That's cool, man. That's really awesome. Just the opportunities, man. So cool.
I really do dread the drive. It's over 13 hours.
Oh, that is kind of
into
grueling.
Wisconsin in March. Oof. It's like driving to Canada.
It'll be interesting just to see also, just with as more and more of these conventions are popping up, like you mentioned Canada. It's not that long ago that Shucks happened, the Shut Up and Sit Down Expo or whatever they called it. That just got done with. And from all the reports that I've heard from different people talking about it, everybody's saying that it was such a great success that they should really do it again. And seeing as it's their very first convention, that's pretty high praise. So it as more and more of this stuff gets out there, as more people are putting these things together and creating this stuff, it's really interesting to see just how that develops and how that, you know, will continue to do stuff. Daniel, you also had that really cool comment in the tavern the other day about the idea of how things affect the industry and how things move forward.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, it actually, I was pondering, because I do that a lot during the day, about like a lawsuit that happened a few years back, and it was between, I can't remember which game it was, but there was a game that was really popular, and the game mechanics were stolen by a Chinese corporation, and they released the game in China with new artwork and a new story. And so they got sued by the company, but then the court comes back and says, you cannot take and copyright game mechanics, period. Yeah. I don't care if you come up with them. The only thing you can copyright is your artwork and your stories. And so, you know, that opened up a lot of things where other people have created games. And we see it a lot as well on tablets and phones. Like, you know, like, just for example, remember Flappy Birds when it came out?
Oh, yeah.
How many copies of Flappy Birds that just had something different about it that came out? Another board game was Carcassonne.
Yep.
Did you ever hear of Farmcassonne?
No.
Where it's tractors and you're farming.
Oh.
And they never got in trouble for it. It's free and it plays just like the original game.
So really, but, so you can't license mechanics, the game
no.
mechanics.
So we can essentially take the Dungeons & Dragons mechanics for 5th edition and create a sci-fi game.
Like Starfinder?
Like crap about it. Yeah. And that, from what I understand, is also how a little bit that Pathfinder.
Yeah, off the
3.5. That's literally how Pathfinder happened.
But that was literally
how it happened.
They never
got sued. They never got sued. And if you look at their artwork inside of a Pathfinder manual versus 3rd edition Dungeons & Dragons manuals or 3.5 manuals, it looks nothing like any of the other work.
Well, that's interesting because I'm trying to think of somebody who would want to like Axes and Allies, you know, or something like that. Like the game mechanics are so solid in games like that, and it's just not being able to like sit there and have a brain enough to put that design together, put it on paper, and get people to understand it and play it, and then you can't copyright it.
Well, I'll give you a newer example from what I understand, and I haven't been able to play it, but from the mechanics of it, is that Dead of Winter has a copy. It's Warehouse 13.
Shut up. Is it actually based on the show?
Yeah, it's based on the show, but it's just reskinned. Like, you're collecting items and going out to these places, and there's a traitor in your group, and you're trying to keep your stuff from getting taken.
Well, here's the thing. You know, there's part of us that wants to go like, oh, man, I can't believe they do all that work and they can't save it. Here's
they can make it work.
Here's the thing, though. This is how genres happen.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
This is how you create a type of game.
Yeah. And I don't see anything wrong with it personally. As long as you give credit where credit's due when it comes to the mechanics. Whoever sat down and came up with those mechanics.
Yeah, because think of it this way. What's a common, like, the big one that I always cite because it is so just everywhere is deck builders.
Yeah.
That's true.
Deck building is a thing that is everywhere. Like, entire games are built off of it, but then other games take that and do other completely different things with it. If Dominion said, anybody has to pay us or you can't use this, we'd never have any of them.
Yeah.
Well, far be it from me to be the Lars Ulrich of the group. You know, I was just mentioning, it seemed, you know, creativity, you know, what that stuff.
But it's interesting there because, like, you want to talk about just the idea of yeah, like, you want to honor the work that those guys, like, these people do a lot of work. Game design is really, really hard.
Yeah, and especially because once you release it, somebody's going to break it.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody will find out, how come this happens? What's going on here?
It's funny, because apparently I'm the weird guy in this, but I don't understand why I'm so weird about it. Apparently, everybody and their uncle comes up and is like, so have you ever, you're designing a game, aren't you? And I said, no. Oh dear Lord, no. And apparently the thing is that everyone who gets hardcore into gaming, like, the natural outpouring is they want to design a game. And I said, no. And here's why.
I want to play the games.
Yeah. I'm like, I know what it takes to design a game. I know how much math. I know how much statistics. I know how much breaking. And I know how much, I know the work that it takes to do that. I don't have that in me. I don't have that kind of statistical craziness going on in my head. I don't have the idea of, okay, if we make this card's power 15 instead of 13, everything breaks. Or if you only have 13 cards in the deck as opposed to 25, how crazy, like, these people know this stuff either by doing the math or by testing it so much that they have that stuff nailed down. Yeah. I just had a buddy of mine who it's funny because before we started, you know, really talking about this stuff and him doing a lot of stuff to hang out with me and Inroads stuff. Before that, he enjoyed a board game every now and then, but since then he has become a mega nerd. And so he has, especially after I introduced him to Jason Tagmeier over at Button Shy, he wants to design a game. And it's really interesting just to see his kind of process from, oh, I, you know, games are kind of fun, to games are amazing, to I want to make a game, to, oh dear Lord, what am I doing?
See, I couldn't do it. I couldn't. I mean, I'll tell you this little brief story here. There was a game that it was a D20 port, again, talking about the whole shared property, right? Game called Midnight. It's kind of based on, like, a fantasy setting where, like, it's not Tolkien, because obviously you couldn't get hold of that, but it's as if Sauron and the Dark Forces had won, and it's, like, the lands after that. And there was a one of my friends knew one of the authors, and they said, hey, you guys want to do some play testing? And I bowed out of it. And my buddy Darren, he's like, Sam, why the heck wouldn't you want to do that? You get your name in the book and everything. I was like, because I don't have the heart to tell somebody that they did something wrong when I completely respect the fact that they actually did this thing. And, like, as far as me trying to design a game, I barely hold it together as a game master trying to convince people that I'm not an idiot. I don't need it proven by seeing how bad rules I can come up with. No way.
And if you want to see an idiot experience, ask the guys about my last D&D Session. Not Get Paid, but Session.
Oh, no.
Curse of Strahd. No.
Well, and this is an interesting thing because, like, I find myself having talked with a bunch of people in the industry, I realize, I go, no, I don't have that part in me. But what I'm discovering is that I love going next to those guys. I love being the guy who those guys come to be like, all right, I have this idea. What do you think? That is my favorite part. I am all like my buddy who's doing this game design. He and I, every once in a while, he'll be like, hey, you want to get on Skype for a second? I got some ideas.
And we'll just like the free games.
Who's getting a free game?
Who's the game designer's like, here, free all your hard work, Mike.
But that's not nothing, because even if the best case scenario, he gets this together, it's in a really good state. The only person who's going to pick it up is Button Shy, and those games are $10 a piece. I got $10 in me. But I really enjoy working with somebody to kind of, I don't know, help them get to that place, help them get to that design realm to sift through kind of the stuff that's already happened. Because that's also the big thing that a lot of designers don't think about. They go, oh, I have this amazing idea, not realizing that 20 other people before them have already had that idea. They'll be like, oh, I did this and this is awesome. I go, exactly. And so did they. How are you different? And really working out what that difference is, what sets them apart. Because there is going to be something. If you're that bought in that you have this idea and you want to see that idea come forward, there is something there that you can find.
What do you mean, like, as far as like a niche or something like that? Or do you mean like,
right,
as far as
something that makes yours different?
Okay.
Either a different mechanism or I don't remember which episode it was, but a handful of episodes ago, Daniel and I talked about the things that set games apart in a world that is constantly filled with new shinies, and none of us have the money to constantly buy all these new shinies. What are the things that give us pause and say, okay, this game is worth buying? And so some of the things that I said was it has to be different than stuff I already have. So it could be a different theme. It could be a different mechanism. It could, like I mentioned Spirit Island and the fact that Spirit Island is different than anything I've ever seen before, because instead of being the colonizers, instead of being the settlers, you are actually the spirits of this island trying to kick those people off because you like the natives and you're fine the way you are. Never seen that before. A recent game, I literally just saw a couple different previews. I posted it up in the tavern. I saw a couple previews for a game called, I want to say it's called The Peacemakers? Dawn of the Peacemakers, that's what it is. I literally just saw a preview of that this morning, and that intrigues me because in a lot of ways, it's a war game, but it's not a war game where you take sides and you lead your army to victory. You are actually a third party. You are a third organization, like, looking at this war and saying, how do we make this war stop? How do we make all these guys pack up their tents and go home without, you know, one side surrendering and the other side conquering them? How do we make it so both these guys just go home? I've never seen that before. I need to do more research into that game. I have no idea if it's going to be good, but that concept alone makes me go, oh my goodness, I want to see more of this. And all of that stuff comes from somebody saying, we have a lot of games that do this. How do we kind of do something that's kind of like that? Like, there's good stuff here that we want to have fun with, but how do we do something that's slant on that? Something that turns this, that does something different with this?
I can go along with that. I mean, and one of my favorite systems, Powered by Apocalypse, is a pretty good example of that, where there's like a riff on just about anything from I picked up one called No Country for Old Kobolds, which is basically about living as a kobold family. But it's all spawned off of that game, and it does something different because it's almost like a resource management version of the game. And then, you know, the Sprawl, or you have Dungeon World, which kind of launched its own type of thing. But yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying.
So like that exists, and it's really fun for me to be the guy that helps somebody else get there. I'm not the guy to do that math. I'm just not. And it's not me like being down on myself either. I literally have no desire to be that guy. I'm not poo-pooing myself. I literally look at that and go, that sounds awful. I have no desire to put myself in that space. But, you know, partly it's due to just the fact that so much of what gets me to a game is theme. In fact, I just had a recent article went up on our site about how the reason I get super excited about Indulgence, the new one from Restoration Games, the reason I got so excited about that is because it's a trick-taking game that actually has theme. Which is funny because I posted that review on Board Game Geek and the first three comments were, this game really doesn't have theme, but it's kind of fun. But I like being that guy to do that part, to help flesh things out, to help make that, I don't know, to kind of birth that, to kind of bring that into reality. Because it is a ton of work. And it's not only is it work, like blood, sweat, and tears work, it is that. But it's a lot of... Here, I will make the turn. There is almost a spiritual element to this.
No, there isn't.
No.
Nope. We're gonna turn back.
No, we're not. No, we're not. I am pressing ahead. Car. I am pressing ahead. No, there is. There's this idea that you really have to dig deep and figure out what's actually important here. Like the first game that my buddy Dave brought to me. It was fine. It was good. I looked at it and said, as a first prototype, this is a good game. He brought it to Jason Tagmeier, and Jason said, I've seen this game 15 times. What are you going to do different? And that wasn't Jason being mean. That was just Jason being, I'm a publisher who makes games just like this. I have people bringing me games just like this all the time. And so Dave then had to look, and he was, you know, at a point he was just kind of upset because he's like, I really thought this worked well. I thought this was good. And I had to look at him and go, yeah, it is good, but good doesn't get published. Good's already been published. You need to find out what's better. And as he just recently sent me a couple messages the other day, and the game that he's describing now, I want to play that one a lot more than the one he started with. And I'm super excited about the possibility there. So before you think I lost on that whole spiritual angle thing, I think that, you know, so many times we talk about discipleship. In fact, it's funny. I just had a youth pastor contact me through Instagram of all places. And we were talking about, you know, what kind of stuff we do. He's like, do you do like fellowship or outreach or discipleship? And I'm like, yes. And so we do all that. And the thing that's really interesting to me is about the whole aspect of discipleship is that we think that it's just, you know, you have to teach them things like in a very academic setting. It's a very, very, I must teach you the skills that you need to do the things to move through. But there's a lot more. Part of it is that there, you can't get away from that. But part of it is literally being that guy who comes alongside and says, what do you really think is important here? As you proceed here, there's a couple different paths you can go down. Which one do you think is the most important? You walk with somebody as they're literally discovering who they are. And that can happen whether you're talking with somebody who's younger. When they're younger, it's more blatant and more obvious because they're literally figuring out what that stuff looks like. But even otherwise, there are times when you're talking with somebody and you realize, you know, you're at a point where you really need to figure out, what do you care about? What is worth fighting for? And why? What are you looking for in your existence, and why? Okay, you find value in that. How does that line up with what God says? All that stuff is, it's playtesting. Discipleship is playtesting, and I swear I might make that a t-shirt.
Come on, you gotta tie that together a bit better than that. Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now. So okay, let me get this straight. Let me break this down a bit. So as disciples, and looking for disciple opportunities or having them thrust upon us by the good Lord above, we have a certain set of rules that we live by, and then the people that are going to be in our lives have a certain set of rules that they live by. But the play test is getting them to, I guess, see the way we live, see that as something that they want to be a part of, and then to test that out for themselves. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, and I think that that's definitely a part of it. I also, so much of how I've become who I am is by people who, like, I've even on a bunch of different places, on Bard and Bible and everything, I've talked about, you know, how my relationship with my dad has been. My dad is not a church leader. He's, you know, never been trained in anything theological, but my dad has taught me a lot more about, you know, life and godliness than a lot of preachers I've literally studied under. And in a lot of ways, it's really been interesting to me, because what's been drawn out of me is literally my dad looking at me and saying, okay, what do you want to do with this? It's been him drawing that out of me. It's been him taking me to a place where it's like, I'm going to make it accessible for you to do what you need to do here. But now you need to figure out what you're actually wanting to do here. It's like when Dave comes to me with this design and said, this is what I have. This is my design. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm planning. And I say, what about this? What about this other aspect? What about this? Asking the questions that lead you to a different understanding, a deeper conversation. It's literally when I've talked with designers of board games, and they say, this is where the game started. I started out trying to create this game. And then I had these conversations and I realized that wasn't that what the game was actually going to be. It is drawn out. Like, it's trying stuff over and over and again. And being in a place where you're able to do that, where someone can say, I want to see what you have to do. I want to see what you're producing. I want to see what you're doing, and I want to help you be better at it.
Okay. I see it. I mean, I guess what I'm kind of struggling with on the point is to see that through the eyes of somebody who, I guess, is being discipled and applying that to my walk. You know what I mean? So when, and from the other perspective, you know, from trying to live out a certain life and to share that example and to be that light and that salt and light that we're supposed to be, that salt of the earth, there's a part of me that's always looking for those, looking for how to apply the rules, I guess, in the right situation. And trying to not so much become a master of it, but to become practiced at it, to become where it becomes natural. You know, I don't need to be like an absolute master at how to live out the godly life, because if I try and do that, then I'm just going to mess it up. But as I'm learning these rules and I'm learning what it means to be a good person in the face of, you know, disaster or happiness or tragedy or just plain Jane everyday life, you know, it becomes more about looking for others that are setting that example as well. And so, like, when I'm looking at games and such, like, you know, for instance, I was I've been kind of like looking around for a different game where I wanted to, you know, set up shop and decide that I wanted to run a game, you know, just kind of like bringing the game thing in just a little bit. And, you know, I started reading through the Cubicle 7's Adventures in Middle Earth, and what you're talking about here, I'm seeing in the way they write that game. It's written in such a way that you can tell it's an homage to the source material because of the way it's written. Not just, you know, hey, these rules are helping to simulate some events in the game, but it's also the language, the beautiful language that they're using is an honor to that source material. It's an honor to that game. And even though they're using 5e, they're looking for that method to set them apart, which I think is being found in not just the setting, but in the way they write things. And so I think as Christians, we're looking for ways to kind of set ourselves apart from the way other people disciple and the way other people have done it in the past. And you're talking about with the way your dad has set a great example for you in your life. Not that he's ever gone to school, gone to seminary like you have, but he's walked that path enough to where he set a good example. And I think we're all kind of striving to look for people like that in our lives. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of like roundabout saying that, you know, I agree with you. And at the same time, I see so much in the way I want to live my life and how much I yearn to see that expressed in others' lives, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think that we're kind of both saying the same thing differently, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Wait a second. Are you 3.5 and I'm Pathfinder?
As crunchy, yeah. No, you go. I think more like you're Pathfinder, I'm Numenera.
There you go.
But, and oddly enough, I think that's not as, you know, a flippant a statement as I made it out to be. I think that actually is pretty accurate. because you're mentioning the rules and how you apply them and how the application of those rules, in the hands of somebody who can lead you and guide you through them can be a beautiful thing and make for this beautiful event. Whereas I'm saying, you need somebody to just be like, boom, this is where you are. What is important? Why do you care? And how do you do it? 3.5 in Pathfinder say, here is the rule set by which you live. Now live it.
If you want to find the good stuff, you have to dig for it.
Right. Whereas Numenera says, literally, your options are limitless. I'm going to walk you through this till you find out the answer that fits. In both cases, there is a boundary, a rule set. There is a guiding framework that puts this out. But in one case, it's very much focusing on how the rules get you to a place. And the other one is, yeah, those rules are here, and these rules will help you do what you're doing. But you got to understand, and you've got to be the one that says, this is what I'm doing. using those rules to, you know, make that a thing. It's funny, we went from a very flippant statement to a very powerful thing, which is kind of what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And you know what's interesting, too, is that that's kind of the way the Bible is put together. It's put together with instructions at the beginning and then expressions of life and how to live them out in the end, and how, you know, the instructions aren't going to save you. The law is not going to save you, but, you know, grace and how it promotes you to live your life is what's going to save you.
I don't want to say it's a new perspective, because it's not. It's not even a different perspective on discipleship than I've had over the years, because ultimately discipleship is discipleship. You are bringing people from where they are to a closer relationship with God, even if it's a half step closer. That's what discipleship is.
Yeah.
But something that I've been pondering is the manner in which we do that. And kind of like we put, I've said on this podcast, I've said a bunch of places, I've even said to people in physical churches not that long ago, I said, we've had this nasty habit of having ministry being a very defined set. Like, this is what ministry looks like. So when I roll up and say, hey, we use board games to minister to people and share the gospel while making sure that we don't preach sermons, people are like, oh, that's not what ministry looks like. And so I spend time kind of elaborating on how this works. Much the same way, I think that we have this understanding of what discipleship is, and it's training. Like, not just training, you know, to use the Bible, the training in righteousness. It's literally training. It's sit down, here's a book, you know, what's your three points, whatever. And we've built discipleship to be this programmatic thing. And it needs to look like that, and it needs to be that, and you need to meet so often and do so many things and do and check off so many boxes. And I don't know, I'm kind of just, I want somebody, this is for me, and again, I think the beautiful thing is this is why I'm Numenera. I think there's a lot of different ways we go about this. And I do think that there's an aspect of this that you need to kind of tweak things and change them up to reach different people. For me, I want somebody who's going to ask me the questions to get me to a place where I have the information. I need to learn what I'm doing with that information. I need somebody who's not going to sit there and give me a classroom setting where I we have the same five questions about the same things over and over again. I need to be in a place where somebody's going to say, all right, you have this. What are you doing with it? I don't need the hardcore instruction. Now, that said, somebody else is gonna need that. It's the same way with games. Some people want, you know, in role playing, you got some people who want the super crunch. They want, oddly enough, Jeff, after you taught me how to play Pathfinder, I'm like, this is awesome, but good golly, I don't know if this game is for me, mostly because I have to look up 15 charts to see whether or not my axe was keen, and that gave me these plus these dice, and my axe was this, which does this, but technically I could have used it two hands, and that does this, and I'm like, I don't care. I don't care. I've never cared. Whereas every time, and literally I can see the comments happening right now from all the people who are going, that's what makes Pathfinder amazing.
Math Grinder is not amazing, guys. I just want to say that.
How dare you? I mean, and I say that knowing that I play Dungeon World and I play Apocalypse World, and that's pretty much my go-to for anything.
Right. And again, I think that we spend so much time figuring out. It's why I have this playtest mentality of discipleship. It's, okay, you have a thing. You tried the thing. What's good about that thing? What sucked about that thing? What, maybe you're holding on to something right now that you think is awesome, but have you talked about it with somebody else? Has somebody else told you that that is awesome and confirmed that to you? Or is it actually hurting you? Like, this concept of playtesting faith in a place where you can put stuff together. Like, games are games. They follow rules. We were just talking about the creation of genres. If I say this is a deck builder, you know what that means. You know that at some point a deck builder will follow certain rules. You'll start out with the same hand, you'll buy new cards, you'll bring those cards into your deck, those cards will come out and give you new powers, so on and so on and so forth. It is a drastically different thing when you're talking about Dominion versus you're talking about Star Realms, when you're talking about Clank, when you're talking about Trains. These are all deck builders, but my gosh, do they all have different expressions. There are rules, and then these people have built stuff off of those rules. Mm-hmm. Because they were given the ability to find that starting place and build off of it. And I promise you that literally every one of those games started off trying to do one thing. They tried it and tried it and tried it, and then they realized, okay, now we have something that's awesome. And I just see that so much in the expression of faith, this whole idea of playtesting and how we need to do more of it, because I really think that's what discipleship is. It's playtesting. It is trying something over and over and over again and evaluating what you're doing. Evaluating that with how it fits everywhere else. Evaluating it with people who have no business telling you how, you know, because the one piece of advice that designers have given to other designers since time immemorial is make sure that you have somebody playtest this who has no idea who you are. Because a friend will lie to you and say that what you're doing is awesome because they want you to feel like you're doing well. Somebody who doesn't owe you that, somebody who doesn't care whether you like yourself or not at the end of the day, will have no problem telling you that's garbage. And that's part of discipleship and community too. There's a reason why we've come up in a place where the church has always been a community of people that says, no, this is, you need to be encouraged. This you're being stupid. The Bible straight up says that we are supposed to do this in community. And part of that is the beauty of community and the encouragement and the support of community. The other part of that is that we are stupid and selfish people who will say that all sorts of things are good and right and decent. And it's the place of the church to be like, no, I really don't think you're on point here.
Yeah. I think if we actually did that with people more than what we have been doing, we would create a lot of a better disciple.
Right. Because that's what playtesting does.
Yes.
Playtesting takes an all right game or even a good game and makes it a great game. Discipleship takes somebody who understands who God is.
It makes it even better.
Yeah. Take somebody who understands who God is and says, okay, now that you know that, how do we get you closer? How do we grow together? Because it's not that the other thing about this is that to go back to Dave and I talking about his game. Ultimately, I want this game to do well. It's not my game. But at the same point, I want this game to be better because it helps both of us have a better experience with this thing that he's making. I want that game to do well. And talking with him about that has made me, just talking about his design and talking about what he does allows me to have more thoughts about what I think is important in making a good game. Just the same way, we always think of discipleship as this one-way thing, like I'm bringing you forward. And I think we miss a huge opportunity there because, yeah, there is an aspect of somebody further down the road bringing somebody up, but there's also the opportunity to learn from that person, from that person's perspective, from that person's experiences that are different. They're, you know, completely a different framework.
And that, a lot of that, not just with discipleship, but also with missions work. I've seen, like, over the years that I've been doing this, that from when, you know, I just went down to Mexico or, you know, just across the border from where I live to the time when I first went overseas to the Philippines and into Southern Mindanao, and realizing that, you know, not everybody thinks the same way that you do. And kind of like what you were talking about, you know, finding different perspectives when you're playtesting something. And sometimes certain discussions work, sometimes they don't, because people are different. You know, we're all made in his image, but we're all wonderfully and beautifully different. And it just makes it so important that you meet people where they're at when it comes to those things. And you may have a game and you want to show these rules, but some people will play it differently than you. And that also makes it beautiful too. So it's a good thing to happen, I think, throughout the church, to be able to, you know, you have your code, you have your rules, you have the Bible, but then you have the ways that people live. And when you look at Paul's ministry and how he talked to people differently in Corinth than he did in Aleppo or talking to people in Rome, it was completely different messages, right? Different ways of talking. So I mean, it's a great thing to have that ability and to recognize it in yourself that you can do that.
Well, and I'll even bring up, because as is my wont, I often, even though it hasn't been recorded yet, it will be recorded and posted before this goes live. So I'll do this. I'm currently in the final touches of putting together stuff for the next Barden Bible. And the next Barden Bible, you know, if you've ever listened to that other podcast, it's my devotional podcast that I do when I'm not doing this. When I'm not recording this with these guys, I record that. And I was putting it together and thinking about just how the different aspects of how you need to treat people differently depending on where they are. I don't give it just a title. It's the tonight's tale is, because of course I have to be that guy. And the next tale is Daddy's Little Snowflake. And the reason I called it that was because every time I see that word used as a pejorative, I think, yeah, and you know what? I was that kid. And if you did what you're saying you should do to me, I never would have made it out of my teenage years. And to not go too into it, go listen to the Barden Bible episode to get a full picture of this. I remember when my dad walked up to me and said, "Your grandfather beat the ever-loving snot out of me because he thought it was how he would make me a better person." And I learned, and I promised that if I had a son, I would never do that to him. My dad never touched me. He never laid a hand on me after having his father beat the ever-loving snot out of him. And I thank God all the time for that, because if he had treated me like my grandfather treated him, again, I never would have made it out of my teenage years. I never would have been the guy I am now. He playtested that crap and said, "Oh my goodness, this sucks. And we need to change this rule set." Second edition worked out real, real good for me, is what I'm saying.
That brings it home pretty well.
Yeah, I hope that this one gets some conversation going. I'd love to see stuff in the tavern, because I think that we're getting to an age in the church where there's a little bit of angst and frustration, because you've got a group of people coming up and saying, you know, what you've been doing is not working for me. And you've got another group of people that says you need to fall in line. And what needs to be happening is that both these people need to get together and say, how do we make this work so that we do not throw out the baby with the bathwater, but at the same point, we are willing to hear other voices and hear of the myriad of angles and stuff that come together in this beautiful thing called the body of Christ. And I want to see more of that happening, because when we do that and we rub off the hard edges and we make everything beautiful, that's what this is supposed to look like. All right, dude. I think that it's only fitting that after a long absence, we let Jeff take us home on this one.
I'm fine with that. That's been like one of my favorite episodes, by the way, guys. Just for the fact that we have Jeff back.
All right. Well, I'll say it once and I'll say it again, and probably have to re-record this so I can say it again. But I'm glad to be back. It's good to hear these guys talking and to conversate, and then just happen to record it and put it on the internet. I mean, who'd have thunk, right? But different opinions aside, 3.5, Pathfinder, Numenera, Dungeon World, or back to the old War Machine. Always remember that. I can't believe it. You guys are making me say this, huh?
Heck, yes, we are. You better be careful, otherwise I'm leaving this in unedited.
I'm getting all choked up, man. All right, always remember that God is the game master, and no matter how the dice fall, the game plays on.